insanity. In the name of Him, from His Holiness, Rama Prasvami, Maharaj, who is a disciple of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who is the founder of Acharya of the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, otherwise known as Vedanta. Maharaj, at the age of 21, while attending college, recently accepted into the medical school, came in contact with the disciples of the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, and upon leaving, decided
to dedicate his life fully to this mission and process. And for the past 40 years, he has been serving Vedic literatures and guiding the souls around the world. He has hundreds of disciples who lead a spiritual leader for. And we are very fortunate to have him today among us to talk to us about a very important topic. So I ask you to please hold your questions until the end, and Maharaj will go ahead and answer any questions you may have. So with that, I'll hand it over to Maharaj. Thank you.
I'm much better at questions than speaking. I've been told. I was once visiting University of Mississippi, Oxford, Mississippi, and the person who was the host was a dual PhD, philosophy PhD and religion PhD, and the big assembly of university students at that. And he said, you know, you have to go to the questions and answers. So I'll be short and invite questions and answers. As an introduction, in the workplace, in modern world in general, and even in the workplace in particular, yoga of some type or another has become more and more popular. And just out of curiosity, how many of you either regularly practice some type of yoga or have some knowledge, working knowledge, and from time to time we practice some type of yoga? Okay. In the first two of the Eightfold Yoga system generally are not taught, but they should be. It's Yama and Niyama, two Sanskrit terms. Basically, it's the do's and the don'ts. It's like they do when you get in an airplane and they, by FAA regulations, they have to read off to you the do's and the don'ts. So the yoga system also has its do's and its do-nots. And this is a do-not session. Because in life, whether it's the workplace or the bigger picture of life, generally, there's goals. You have a sense of a purpose of life and a goal of life, and to fulfill those purposes or goals, then there are things that are beneficial and things that are detrimental. So if you do the beneficial but don't take care of the detrimental, you grow a garden, you plant nice seeds, and you water the garden, and something happens. Not just the things that you planted grow, but weeds grow. Ever done gardening? Weeds grow. They grow faster than the other things. You have to do some weeding. So to be successful, they have to attend to the do-nots, the niyamas. So this subject matter, six work habits that destroy your peace and sanity, as it says, the subtitle is based on teachings of Rupa Goswami. So there's a painting on your left, no, excuse me, your right, is Rupa Goswami and his elder brother, Sanatan Goswami. They were living in India about 500 years ago, during in the northern part of India, northeast part of India, which was then ruled by a Muslim ruler named Nawab Hussein Shah. and they were from a Saraswat Brahmin family, and they were awesome personalities, leaders by their character, so much so that the Nawab put two and two together and went to them and said, you're very capable, so I would like you to assist me in my government rule. And if you do, I will take care of you, and you can take care of your people, and everyone will be happy. I'll be happy, you'll be happy, everyone will be happy. And if you don't, then I'll just torture and kill all the people that are followers of Vedic tradition. Which one would you prefer? Because he was not a nice man. So they didn't want to do either, but they accepted the service in that Nawab Hussain Shah's government. And on our right, Sanatan Goswami became the Prime Minister. So, and Rupa Goswami became the Home Minister. And their brother was the Finance Minister. They took care of the government. So the king could go off and conquer new territories. But they had no interest in that. And in the course of time, they relinquished that aristocracy position and the fabulous wealth and all of that to go live as mendicants in Vrindavan, the land of Krishna. And that's where this drawing is taken from. And Rupa Goswami is the one who wrote one book, Nectar of Instruction, Upanishamrita in Sanskrit. And what I'm going to present is taken from his writing. So it's general instruction in how to you can be successful, or in another list, these six of how you can destroy your life, or in this case, you know, the workplace. Destroy your peace and sanity, which will destroy your life, your work life, certainly. So it's very short, six items. We'll just show them and then expand on them. I have remote works. Overaccumulation, so that little thing at the top. Okay. Sanskrit word is atyahara. Atyahara means overaccumulation. So a life that's balanced is you accept what you need, and beyond what you need, you don't accept. And if you don't follow that principle, you engage in overaccumulation of stuff, things that aren't required, then it inhibits your effectiveness in life and your peace and sanity. Rupa Goswami, then details there's some categories of overaccumulation. It's not just stuff, but he indicates also overeating or over-acquiring of information and data. Any one of those three. So we could spend a little bit of time. Material stuff is kind of obvious. I mean, how many pair of shoes do people need? You have 2 feet. In some places, I've visited homes where you open a closet door and there's, you know, a pile of shoes falls out. It's distracting for the mind. It's clutter. It's unnecessary. It takes away the vital spirit of the living being for acquiring and accumulating stuff that we don't need. I have a friend who knew he had that tendency to gather stuff. So he had a little ritual once a year. He would take his stuff, put it in the middle of the floor, and then decide, okay, what can I get rid of? It wasn't the same question as what do I need? It was, you know, what I really, really don't need. And then he would throw it away or give it away, or goodwill or, you know, charity or something, find a person that didn't have, and he would give stuff, and then that was it for the year. Then he would put his stuff back in their place. But purposefully, it's like weeding a garden, just take stock of what you have and that which you don't need, find a place where there's a need for it and put it over there. Somebody that doesn't have and you have something you don't need and propose it over there. It's just maybe an act of charity, but it's also an act of sanity rather than the other way. And the principle of being charitable is a good principle to live by anyways. So that's stuff. And then eating, it's a principle of yoga. Not too much, not too little. Better if you're going to err on the too little side than the too much side. So certainly for health, certainly for keeping a mind that's concentrated and, you know, a system of your body and mind that's balanced and take what's necessary but not more than what's necessary. In fact, there's a teaching within the yoga system, whatever your capacity is, different persons have different capacity, whatever possibly you can eat, the advice is eat half, and then one quarter water and the other quarter air, and then you can digest your food. But you do it the other way, it causes a problem of health and lack of focus, and your peace and sanity is disturbed. And certainly this last one is, I can only imagine how much information you all have to process in the information age, and I would assume an office like this isn't a factory, this is the information department. So you're responsible to gather and manage and utilize necessary information. And, you know, necessary information can easily, having the skill for that, can easily lead to unnecessary information and distraction. I'm sure there's some statistic, I've heard discussions about, you know, people being ineffective at work because of distraction with the internet and browsing, and when it starts innocent, it's like check the news, and then it goes to, you know, so many other things, and time passes, and just gathering, just, you know what I mean. So it's just limited for that which is, again, the principle of useful for your mission, your life, the function that you're performing. You do that in a satisfactory and even a robust way. And leave it at that. There's distraction. All three of these, it has certainly something to do with the ability of the mind to focus. And if in the workplace or in life, if you're very focused, you can be much more effective and much more contented. And when it gets, you know, over accumulation of these things, unfocused, ineffective, actually not peaceful anyways, and, you know, a disturbance for yourself and a disturbance for others. So this is one principle, atyahara. To be, this is a niyama. Don't do this one. And then over endeavoring. So for every action, there must be some endeavor. It's one of the in Bhagavad Gita. Anybody not familiar with Bhagavad Gita? Not familiar. Okay, I don't have one to show you. It's a basic text, ABC. Text that teaches, one way to describe it, describes it teaches the yoga systems. It's a process of self-realization and elevation of consciousness through karma yoga and gyan yoga and dhyan yoga and samkhya yoga and buddha yoga and bhakti yoga. There's different yoga systems. It's not detailing them, it's describing principles. So, in that Bhagavad Gita, it describes there are five factors for action. ultimately is the supreme, but there has to be a place and a performer and some endeavor for every action, for there to be, you know, some activity, some endeavor. Over-endeavoring is an inhibitor. Over-endeavoring means there's a task. Maybe I want to walk across the floor, something. So that's not so difficult. Maybe a task that's a little more difficult, climbing 10 flights of stairs, or whatever, some task that needs to be done. Some challenge there that's there in your life. And the advice of Bhagavad Gita is, you make a reasonable endeavor according to your means. And over-endeavoring is, there's a goal that's not really realistic, not realistically attainable, and you put everything else to the side and just continue, you know, neglecting your health, neglecting your relationships, neglecting and, you know, over-endeavoring to the point where balance is lost in your life. Those things that you need to continue sustainably to be a happy, healthy, whole being, you neglect those things and the wellness of your life goes down, your productivity goes down, even looks like, you know, you're trying your very, very best. One should make a reasonable, full, honest, sincere effort, and this over-endeavoring is an inhibitor to your peace and sanity and your effectiveness. Simple. Mundane speech, prajalpa. Another Sanskrit term maybe some of you are more familiar with, those of you from India, is gramya katha, village talk. Blah, 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 blah. An uncontrolled tongue that's just blah, blah, blah. There's no purpose or meaning to it other than you got to say something. I travel a lot, so I meet some people that's... there's almost always, or usually, I'd say, a really noisy guy in the plane. Lady or a guy. And loud, blah, 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 blah. People are trying to finish up whatever they're doing before the plane takes off. And anyway, it's an annoyance. And just speaking on purposeless, meaningless, just mundane talk, it drains. The faculty of speech is very powerful. There's another teaching of Rupa Goswami is, just to shorten it, for the practice of yoga, there's two things, the tongue and the mind, that need to be gradually brought under control. So there's the elevated state of consciousness and deep concentration can be attained. And a way to help control the senses is if the one sense can be controlled, the other senses can be controlled, because it takes some mental discipline to control the tongue. So like the eating, that some tongue has two functions, eating and speaking. You want to be effective in yoga or effective in the workplace, learn to control your tongue. And speak those words that are necessary, and speak those words that are elevating, both to yourself and to the person who you're speaking to, whether it's productivity or whatever it is that you're speaking about. Mundane, excessive, mundane speech drains your energy, drains your focus. It'll help make your life disturbed and disturbing to others rather than peaceful and happy. So that's three. Then we only have three more and we're done. Niyama, agraha. Now, I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but I know this much. that when there's a compound word, it can be broken this way or that way. That is to say, it can be niyama agraha or niyama agraha, and there's two different meanings. Yes? Okay. So, in general, means leading a mechanical life. So here's the two. One of them is, you do things, but you don't know why you're doing things. You just do things mechanically. I think I'm going to just share something, especially those of you from India will know about this. Krishna's lifting of the Govardhan Hill. You from America don't know about Krishna's lifting. You know about Krishna? A little bit. Okay. Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. But before he lifted Govardhan Hill, he was with his friends, and he was the son of the king, who was Nanda Maharaj, who was the king of their occupation, was taking care of cows. So as a young boy, he was taking care of cows with his friends. And as they were taking care of cows, moving along the side of a hill called Govardhan Hill, he saw a big arrangement of piles of grains and ghee and different articles. So he asked his father, what's all this? Obviously there's some kind of preparation for a festival. Can you please tell me, my dear father, it's the duty of the father to instruct the son, so I'm asking you, please tell me, what is the festival and what's the purpose behind the festival? This function, this sacrifice. Because even if you do something without knowing the purpose behind that something, you don't get the benefit, the full benefit, some benefit. But if you know the purpose behind that sacrifice or that honoring of someone or something, full benefit comes. So that's Krishna speaking. So life is like that. There are things that we do, but we may do them mindlessly or mechanically. And living one's life that way doesn't lead to peace and happiness. It destroys your peace and happiness. And then there's the other, where there's things that that are beneficial for you. That's the niyama agraha. There's niyama agraha and niyama agraha. And things that are beneficial, you just neglect them. So doing things that should be done, but you don't know why, you just do them. And things that should be done, you don't do them. Thus, this is this niyama. Yama and niyama. Conduct that is to be done, you don't do. Rejecting wisdom without even thinking about why. Like teenagers do sometimes. Then, janasanga, materialistic association. Materialistic association has to do with, specifically for yoga, without even giving thought to the higher purpose of life, just kind of an impulse, and then you just move on that impulse. A scratch and you itch it. The other way around, you itch and you scratch it. Without really considering the higher values and the higher purposes of life. I mean, again, it's like one of the things that I do is I help families that are raising children understand how to raise their children. And I'm not married, but I end up doing that, like, you know, pastoral counseling kind of thing. And one of the things that's a big deal for parents these days is kids that get hooked on video games. And they just, like, really good families, really good kids, and they just get lost in video games, and the quality of their life goes down, their academics go down, their relationships go down, everything, their appetite goes down, their everything goes down, just from that one thing. But they're hooked, they can't, it's like an addiction, without details. So, like that, association with something that the higher value of life is the sight of it is lost. That's what this means. And too much of that kind of association leads to more of that. There's a principle spoken of in very early in Bhagavad Gita. This little ABC text, Bhagavad Gita, that says, Sangat Sanjayate Karma. You develop qualities like the association you keep. Like parents are very concerned with who their children are associating with. Naturally, because a good boy or girl in association with a not so good boy or not so good girl can take on qualities like their association. It happens. Invariably, one can trace out where bad behavior comes from is bad association. Even in a good family, it can happen. So parents are concerned about who their children are associating with. And then, you know, adults. The association that we keep is very important because you develop qualities like the association you keep. And those that are overly materialistic, we have bodies, we have minds, and they have some needs. We attend to them in a proper way, in a balanced way. But overly indulging in materialistic association, where there's simply contemplation on, you know, how I can become an enjoyer of different facilities of life. Again, something anecdotal. In the course of my travels, it happens, you know, some part of the time, where there's a gathering of people in homes, and because their son has gone off to college, they allow me to stay in their son's room. And in Indian families, it's a classic. Here's what it is. And those of you from India, you'll laugh. There's four walls. One of them is where the door is. And then there's three other walls. And one wall is the little red sports car. Or, you know, when they get their job, they want one of those. Then over here is one of their favorite athletes. A basketball player, or a football player, or soccer player, or, you know, something. And over here is their favorite movie star. And then over on their night table, a little picture of Ganesh. It's practically universal. Because when I grow up and I get my degree and I'm going to go out there and I can do what I want to do, that's what I want to do. So higher values of life are needed. One is actually more effective. If there's higher values of life, then you consolidate your energies and your focus, your intelligence, your purpose driven for something that's going to add value to your life and or value to the lives of others around you, the world. A little sharing, again, from someone who moves around a lot. There's advantages. Everything has its advantages and disadvantages. One of the advantages is I get to meet lots of people. And from different backgrounds. And one of the things that I found interesting, in the last, it started maybe 4 or 5 years ago, a little bit, an interest amongst young people in America to move towards a cause orientation. Social activism, that's the phrase, social activism. So students entering both in the United States and in Europe, entering into college freshmen, surveyed asking, what's the main criterion that you have in deciding your career? Answer. I want to do that which is going to make the quality of life better in this world. You know, why? Because I see those that haven't done that, they really made a mess of things. You know how young people, the older generation always makes a mess of things, and we're going to do it better. Always, as the view. And so, social activism. Second question. Isn't it important to you how much money you make? Answer. I see the older generation, my parents and all their peers, they make lots of money, and I don't see that they're happy. I don't see that, you know, they're making the quality of life better. I want to make the quality of life better. It's not how much money I make. I mean, it's a value. I'm not saying it's good, bad, just that's the younger generation today. And when there's that value, then there's willingness to sacrifice of, you know, accumulation of things, or, you know, the materialistic life devoid of higher value. So when there's a life of higher value, those things, whether you have them or don't have them, you're okay. If you have them, you're okay. If you don't have them, you're okay. You don't get enamored by having or distressed if you don't have. So it's, if there's too much of this, then it can destroy your peace and your sanity and your productivity even. And this is the sixth, lovium, and we're done. Lovium means greed. Excessively, more and more and more and more and more. And the result of it is the planet Earth is being destroyed. And that's a whole presentation in itself, where consumer economics is a burnout. Without readjusting that model in any way at all, the resources, you probably know this better than I do, but the resources that the present planet Earth, the population on the present Earth planet, it requires 1 3/4 Earth planets, and there's only one. I mean, to meet the demand of the appetite of consumerism, the raw materials and the labor and growth and all of those things, and the trash that results from it, without all the, it's a whole other discussion. And population is growing, and the need and greed isn't diminishing. So it leads to problems for Earth planet and for the next generation. This is just one example. There's a professor that I visit in Knoxville, Tennessee. And he used to be the chairman of the robotics division, which was a collection of mechanical engineering and several civil engineering and a few others. And the specific application of robotics was disposing of nuclear reactor waste. So he was sharing with me, I'm not giving you his name, but he was sharing with me confidentially, they discovered that the capsules that they were putting the nuclear reactive material in were leaking. So they had robots that would go into this waste area, gather up their nuclear reactive waste, put it in a capsule, seal up the capsule. The robots would take the capsule and put the capsule in a truck. They took the truck off to, I won't tell you what state they took them to, buried it in the ground and covered it up. And then made another hole and kept doing it. And then they found it was leaking. So all this radioactive material was going into the water table. You know, the water table isn't just in that little area, it's all over the place. And at least from my memory of ninth grade science, it takes like hundreds of years for the lethal doses of radioactive material to become no longer lethal. So he told me, when they discovered that, they called the Department of the Interior, Department of Defense, Department of Energy, and Department of this and that, and they'd have their powwow. And to him, it was a no-brainer. You just, like, stop the nuclear reactor until you figure it out. and then you figure it out, and then you resume the nuclear reactor. But they couldn't do that. The government people couldn't do that because somebody's got a lot of money coming in, and those people were, forgot all the politics. So it's like, you know, handing your child or the next generation a burning stick of dynamite. It's just a question of when it's going to explode and etc. So greed can destroy your peace and sanity. So when doing something going forward with whatever your life and your occupation and your family and things are that you're working with, greed is something that needs to be curbed. That's a weed that needs to be pulled. And so the solution for all of these goes to the other list of six, which we can do another time. But that's, you know, things where you repose your energy in consciousness lifting and value lifting, principle centered ways of living, then it makes it easy to pull the weeds. Or in the language of Bhagavad Gita, Pram Drishtvana Vartate. Vishaya Vinivartante, I hope you don't mind my saying a Bhagavad Gita verse. Vishaya Vinivartante Niraharishadehinam Rasavarjam Rasopyasya Pram Drishtva Nivartante. When there's a higher taste, it's easy to give up a lesser taste. It's easy. It's difficult if you don't. It's difficult to overcome these things that may destroy your peace and sanity. Therefore, the positive things, you know, the yamas and the niyamas, then do your yoga. Live your life in a balanced way. Done. So along with your, those of you that raised your hands, that regularly or from time to time have some practice in yoga, look it up. Within the yoga textbooks, there are yamas and niyamas. Even for martial arts, they teach. You know, these are values that you should live your life by. And these are things that you should refrain from. About 10 days ago, I was at an ear doctor. I had accumulation of wax in my ears. I went to this ear doctor. And he's a Chinese man, very, he has all these awards all over the wall in the sitting room. He's apparently a very accomplished physician. And when he came in, it was early in the morning, he said, "You're lucky." He said, "Usually there's a long line. This morning it's pretty quiet, so we can take care of this thing right away. What's what you need?" Then he looked at, you know, how I was dressed. And he said, are you a monk?" Common lead in. "Yes, what kind of monk?" I said, a Krishna monk. "Oh, Krishna monk. How long have you been doing this?" "You know, 40-something years." I said, "So how did you, when you want to, this is a profession for you then, and what's the training?" He's writing stuff on his clipboard. "What's the training for this profession?" So I said, "Boot camp." Not like the military, but you know, basic training. That's the military term, basic training. Where you learn these things. You learn the yamas and niyamas. You know, most important thing is character. And then, along with character, then comes behaviors that are built upon character. We learn a life of regulation, because that's a quality of goodness. Taking people that are not in the quality of goodness and elevating to the quality of goodness by training. And then basic practices that help take our consciousness further and teachings and all those kinds of things. And then somebody has a certain nature and they can do their work, their activity according to that nature. So you all have you're way past all of that. You're all skilled, professional people. And these yamas and niyamas are very important to be effective. So any discussion or comments or questions? Yes, sir?
On the first point, board accumulation,
did you
say I won't get too much information or...
Say it again, please.
The very first one was over accumulation, right?
Yes, over accumulation.
And the last point in there was...
information data.
Information and data, but back then it was very, it was all word of mouth.
Yeah, they didn't have IT.
Yeah, they didn't have IT, so you are just inferring, because it probably would not have been in as an original teaching, right? That's an inference that you're making?
Well, yes and no. Yes, because it's specific for our modern times. But also, there's relevance and irrelevance. I lived most of my adult life in New York City. My childhood didn't start in New York City. But one of the things that I learned about New Yorkers is that they're very proud of knowing a lot. They're like, you know, experts in anything, just ask them. And whether they use that or whether they're even experts or not, I have my other opinion. To be effective and to be peaceful and to be, sane, those things, there are lots of things I don't know. And lots of things I don't need to know. The things that I need to know, I'm interested in, and I want to become very, very knowledgeable of those things I need to know. Lots of things, like I don't know how to build cars. But you need to know about at least some part of all of that, and that's the modern application. Your question specifically is, was it pertinent during that time? Yes.
No, my question was, was it part of his preaching? Or are we making an inference here?
Part of the teaching?
Yes.
Yes.
Of his original teaching. Because information back then was very sketchy.
Yes.
It used to be all word of mouth. There was no other way to communicate. Right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's correct. Well, written language, the Vedas themselves previously, prior to the Kali Yuga, it wasn't even written. It was just verbal. The Kali Yuga has been going on for 5,000 years, and information sharing has been going on for some time. Now, the rate and scale and speed is now different. So, yes, it's a particular application, but it had its relevance. It had its relevance.
I understand that. I mean, data overload is more of a recent thing.
Yes, I agree.
It really wasn't there.
I agree.
So that's what I'm trying to get to.
Okay, but just to be accurate, it's a yes, but it's a qualified yes. The commentary, what happened to the picture? The commentary that was written on this goes back way before IT. The book was written 500 years ago, and it was commented upon, and so before IT, it was a principle. Over-accumulation of things that you really don't need, but just like accumulation.
Thank you.
Yes?
So, means like the Facebook medical research, like people who are using Facebook are more like sad.
Facebook are more sad.
More often they are like more sad. That was research done in the UK. So that like very much relates to like, how over information is actually.
Guruji, I have a question, maybe not be related to this, but it's based on one of the points that you raised. You talked about a person's character and behavior. The reason I'm asking this is because my daughter had a class last week, and she goes for language classes.
Okay.
And so they read a lot of moral stories in it.
Yes, they do.
So in one story, the moral was you need to decide your friends based on their character.
Good.
But my question would be is that I think a person's character is based on the behavior, and the behavior in turn is based on the person's experiences in life. Okay. Now, how would we teach our children how to decide on what is good and bad, but not being judgmental based on the character?
The punchline of your question is different than so many other things that you said. What would you like me to respond to?
I'm saying, how do we teach our children not to be judgmental based on somebody's character?
Well, the best way to teach somebody something is to be that which you are trying to teach them. Teach by example. Best. You can teach by precept, but better than precept is example. Achar is stronger than prachar. Be non-judgmental. Show profile for your others, your children or anyone else, how to. And then if you can explain. But children are smart. If they say, mommy, you're saying don't be judgmental. But you're judgmental all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not saying your children, I'm not saying you're judgmental. I'm just saying children are sharp.
Absolutely.
When they say, you should be Prahlad Maharaj, they'll say, how come you're Hiranyakashipu? How come you don't profile what you're teaching you want from us? And, some won't say it, but some will feel it. And then, you take them through examples. I like the method of teaching by asking questions. How would you feel? And then if someone does like this, are there different ways that you can behave? What are some of them? Which one feels best to you and why? So then they understand the why behind the what. And they own it because they said it. It's much better than you say and they go, yes, mommy, and then they go out the door and they do what they want to do. But if they say it, then they own it. Then you support it. Very good. But let's do some role play. What if such and such? How could you be non-judgmental and such and such? Well, then rather than say, no, that's wrong, we'll say, is there another way to look at it? What do you can you think of any other ways to look at it? Just keep asking questions. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? Would that be less judgmental than this other way? What do you think? Yeah, mommy, that would be less judgmental. And how does that feel? And you do the role play. Something happened and someone went da-da-da-da. Now how do you feel? And if someone didn't, they went something else, how would you feel? Isn't that better? Yeah, mommy, that's fine. So let's do another one. They just kind of go through it, run through again and again, and they go, it's like making a path through the forest. And then there's a path. Then it's easy to travel on the path, but there's a path of how to be not judgmental. But if the teaching is one thing and behavior is something else, you're not being supportive of that good quality in your child to be not judgmental. Profiling or being the Acharya principle is the best. Someone else? Okay, it's pizza time. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, Maharaj, for coming and enlightening us on these wonderful concepts and topics. Hopefully in the future, some other time when you visit us here again forward.